Good morning, Your Honors. This case represents, I think...
Just for the record, your name?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Richard Bulwer from the Federal Defender's Office in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Representing?
Representing the petitioner.
Okay.
Your Honor, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Your Honors, this case, I think, represents a test to the circumstance of unusual facts not tethered to specific conduct. I readily admit, Your Honor, that the facts here, Your Honors, are unusual. The issue here before this Court is, at the time the consent was sought, was there reasonable suspicion to continue to hold Mr. Chacon? And at the time the officers questioned him, I think there was not. And let me go through the sequence, because I think the sequence is important in terms of the arrest. Officer Rhodes arrives at the scene where the car is, 11:39. Mr. Chacon is detained pursuant to the R&R, the report and recommendation finding, 11:40. Questioning has already begun at this point in time. Mrs. Butterball, who was the woman who was in the trunk, is out at this time. And by 11:44, Mr. Chacon has been Mirandized. He is in handcuffs. Miss Butterball is in handcuffs. And the officers continue to question Mr. Chacon. At this point in time, the officers readily acknowledge that there was no evidence of the kidnap that they had been that had been suggested in this case. There was no evidence that Miss Butterball had been tied, or there was no injury. There was no suggestion that that had happened. In fact, they did not treat her like a victim. They placed her in handcuffs almost immediately.
Okay. Mr. Bowie, you're not challenging the initial Terry stop on the basis of the citizen report of an attempted kidnapping in progress?
I am not, Your Honor. I think that there could be different bases for that, exigent circumstances, reasonable suspicion. I'm not challenging that.
All right. So if we take your characterization, with which I agree, that this is a very strange set of facts, at the time you're talking about here, literally within 5 minutes or so of the arrival of the first officer on the scene, the police still don't know what they've got. It might not be a kidnapping, but it could be any number of things, including a domestic violence dispute, some sort of an attempted extortion, some sort of illegal eavesdropping. I mean, this is bizarre, to say the least. And is it your position that the police simply had to withdraw at that point without completing their inquiries as to exactly what was going on?
No, Your Honor. I think that what's significant here is that they can continue their investigation. The issue is the nature of the detention. My client, Mr. Chacon, was taken out at gunpoint and then walked backwards, handcuffed, and searched. This is, as the court recognized, one of the most intrusive forms of detention. I am not suggesting, Your Honors, that they could not continue to question Mr. Chacon. By all accounts, he was compliant. He answered questions. He never attempted to in any way misdirect or impede the investigation. The issue is not whether or not they can continue to investigate and ask questions. The issue is, can they continue to hold him in handcuffs facing the police car after he'd been taken out at gunpoint?
But the argument in front of us is not whether they could continue to hold him in the handcuffs. The question is, at the time the consent was obtained, was he legitimately being held on suspicion? Isn't that right?
That's absolutely correct.
Because if he was legitimately being held on suspicion, isn't the consent proper?
If he is legitimately being held on suspicion, I have a separate argument about why I still believe that circumstances would render that consent involuntary.
Okay.
But let's take the first issue. I think that the issue is whether or not at that time he was legitimately being detained. And I think this court's precedent in Thomas and in Ortiz Hernandez, which I'm sure Judge Tallman and Judge Fletcher, you're all familiar with since you were part of that panel, there was an issue with respect...
We do remember that case.
there was an issue with respect to at what point reasonable suspicion had dissipated. The magistrate judge in this case found that reasonable suspicion dissipated from the moment that Ms. Butterball got out of the trunk. That's actually in the record at 12.
You say the magistrate judge found that? The magistrate judge found that the reasonable suspicion still existed at the time of the consent.
What the magistrate judge found was that reasonable suspicion for the kidnap had begun to dissipate, but that they should be permitted to continue because unusual nature of the circumstances.
Because they, I guess this is kind of like a doctor trying to figure out, based on the symptoms that are presented, what disease we're treating here. We've ruled out kidnapping, but we haven't ruled out other potential criminal behavior. And Terry simply says that you may continue the stop so long as you have reasonable suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot. Now, the magistrate judge found that they did have reasonable suspicion that criminal activity might be afoot, but the problem was trying to figure out what the crime was at this point.
And, Your Honor, and I suggest that that's an important distinction, because Terry talks about the fact that unusual circumstances must be tethered to experience supporting an inference of a specific criminal activity. It is not sufficient that they have a hunch or some...
No, it doesn't. It doesn't say it has to be tied to a specific crime. The language specifically is reasonable suspicion that criminal activity may be afoot.
Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that's not what it says. What I'm saying is that that is tethered to the officer's experience as to what types of crimes may be afoot.
Well, I've given you two others that you haven't ruled out yet in our diagnosis of Mr. Chacon.
I'll address those. First of all, the officer's testimony makes no mention of any other inference that they drew. They went there with the idea of a kidnap, and throughout their entire testimony, they did not suggest that there's a domestic violence incident because they placed her in handcuffs, they didn't call the paramedics, they did not treat her as the officers did in Brooks, which is a case cited by the government.
But we're dealing with a woman in the trunk of an automobile on, what was it, July the 22nd in Las Vegas? You don't normally put people in the trunks of cars at that time of year. That in itself.
I was going to say, Your Honor, I don't know what time of year one would get into the trunk of the car in Las Vegas.
I guess what my question, which was inartfully framed, is, you know, why couldn't a reasonable police officer believe that this might be an ongoing domestic violence situation? Why else would a person be in the trunk of a car in July?
Both of the individuals gave consistent and corroborating statements as to why. Albeit somewhat
wrong. Officer Rhodes didn't know that at that point.
Officer Rhodes was not sure of that. Officer Carlson had heard part of the story, Your Honor. So I'm not saying that it was clear that Officer Rhodes was completely familiar with that.
Well, I mean, the problem with your argument is that they've separated the two people, which, as I understand it, is good patrol procedure to see if you get different stories from the two people. But Officer Rhodes hadn't finished talking with Mr. Chacon, and Officer Carlson or whoever was with the putative victim here hadn't finished talking to her, and they hadn't had an opportunity to compare the versions of the stories that they were being given. The investigation was still ongoing. So what's the problem at that point with Officer Rhodes saying to Mr. Chacon, do you mind if I look in your trunk?
The problem is, Your Honor, they had 15 minutes to address the issue of the crime that they went there to address. And they did not come up within that 15 minutes any evidence of further activity.
I thought we were talking 5 here. Now you've got me to 15.
No, Your Honor. They Mirandized Mr. Chacon at 11:44.
Right.
The gun is found at 11:59. The testimony indicates the gun was found shortly after the consent. So for at least 15 minutes...
Well, wait. We've got a report to the dispatcher that a gun has been found. Was the testimony that that report was made immediately upon the finding of the gun? Or is that when we have a radio or MDT log entry that a gun had been found?
The testimony gives different sources for that. One is that it can be radioed in and the dispatcher can put it in. The other is the officer can put some of that in. The testimony generally is that there's a lag. So there's a lag from the first time, and so there's lag from the...
So all we know is that the gun was found sometime between the time he was Mirandized and the time that a log entry was made that a gun had been found.
Actually, the officer, Officer Rhodes, indicates that it was at least 10 minutes from that time. That's in his testimony.
So now we're between 10 and 15.
But in the court, the district court, the magistrate court, found there was approximately, again, 20 minutes in terms of the length of the detention.
No more than 20 minutes.
Right, no more than 20 minutes.
Yeah. Why don't we hear from the government, and then we'll give you a chance to respond.
Thank you.
Good morning. Adam Flake for the United States. May it please the Court. I don't I don't disagree with the basic characterization of this case, which is that if reasonable suspicion had evaporated at the point they asked for consent, then the search would be invalid. But obviously the government strongly disagrees with Mr. Tacon's position that reasonable suspicion had ceased to exist at that point.
Now, so in your view, at the time that they get the consent, it's reasonable suspicion of what?
It is reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot.
Okay, but be more specific now, because what criminal activity could they have been reasonably suspicious might be afoot?
Well, first of all, kidnapping. And I think, Judge Tallman, if I could just address, I'm not sure if you were speaking in hypotheticals when you were talking to my colleague, but you said, you know, kidnapping is ruled out at the point that they ask him for consent, and I disagree. We have what Officer Rhodes knows is that he says he didn't do a kidnap, and Officer Rhodes knows that the putative victim doesn't immediately say, "Thank goodness you rescued me, I've been kidnapped." Those are the two facts that he knows.
Well, she appears in the victim appears to be rather grumpy that they've taken away her cell phone.
Right.
So to the extent she expresses unhappiness, it is not about anything other than, give me my phone.
Correct, Your Honor. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
But as we pointed out in our brief, I don't think that within 15 minutes of starting this investigation, they could even be reasonably satisfied that a kidnapping had not occurred. This is a potential domestic violence situation. You know, this isn't in the record. This is not. We don't have evidence of this. I'm talking hypothetically. But he could well have said, when the police pulled him over, he could well have said to her, "Hey, you better tell them that I didn't kidnap you, or I'm going to, you know, you'll hear it when I get done with them." And they don't know if she was acting under duress. They don't. It's, as has been amply discussed already, it's bizarre. Why on earth would a grown woman be lying in the trunk of a car on a hot summer day? And so I don't think that kidnapping is. I don't think that kidnapping has been ruled out. But in addition to that, there are any number of criminal scenarios that could present themselves based on this unusual and, I would add, nefarious behavior. Why would somebody hide in a trunk? Why does somebody hide on a hot summer's day if they're acting in a way that is above board? It's suspicious.
Now, it seems to me there's absolutely no obligation on the part of the police at the time they act to say, "I'm suspicious of X, Y, and Z." Do we attach any importance in the question of suspicion that criminal activity might have been afoot as to they don't say anything afterwards as to what criminal activity they thought might be afoot?
Well,
I mean, it's absolutely too much to expect of them at the time they're acting to say, "Well, okay, here, I'm suspecting X, Y, and Z." No, they have some sense that something may be wrong and so on. But
well, I'm not sure if. I don't think that is required. I'm not going to pretend that I know what the police were thinking, but I don't think they, you know, sat down with their code book and they said, "Well, this could be extortion, or it could be eavesdropping, or it could be a kidnap, or it could be this." They got a call that somebody stuck somebody in a trunk.
I'm not even close to imposing upon them a requirement at the time they get the consent that they say out loud, "Okay, here's what I think."
Right.
I'm asking a different question is, at some later time, as we are evaluating whether or not they had reasonable suspicion, should we expect that the police tell us then, when they're no longer pressed, they're just sitting in an office somewhere, what crimes they might have suspected?
Well, I'm sorry that I wasn't clear in my previous answer. I don't think so. I don't think that they're required to even formulate what particular crime they may have been suspecting at the time. They're doing an investigation, and they're trying to. They're not starting with crimes in mind and with particular crimes in mind and trying to check off a list. Oh, he's not doing this and he's not doing this. They're starting with what they have, which is a bizarre situation that suggests criminality, and the investigation going forward from that point, which is let's figure out what's going on here. And so I don't think that they're required to engage in you know, after the fact in some post hoc sort of description of what specific crimes they may have been looking for.
Okay.
Well, so I'm looking at the cross-examination of Officer Rhodes, which is on ER 72, and he was asked, because at that point it was a little bit of a strange scene, I would imagine, right? Answer, yes. Question, because it didn't appear to be a kidnap, right? Answer, at that point it was still unknown.
Correct.
So your argument there is I should read into that he had not yet ruled out kidnap. He didn't know what he had.
That's correct. He did not know what he had. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll submit.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Response? Let's start out with a minute.
Thank you. I think that the officers do testify that if you continue to read that same quote, Judge Solomon, where the officers pressed about the circumstances, said based upon her condition, no. So at that point, there's no indication. And the officer Rhodes testified also that there was nothing in his experience that suggested this was a kidnap, that he'd had kidnap cases before and it didn't resemble that. I think the issue before the court is, does unusual, and albeit strange and bizarre, justify continued investigation for in terms of detention? Again, I'm not suggesting they couldn't ask him questions, and I'm not suggesting that they could not have continued their investigation. What I am saying is that once they have facts that tend to undermine their reason for detaining the individual, as this court has found in Thomas and Ortiz-Hernandez, they must release that individual. It does not mean they cannot continue to question that individual.
But the officers, I mean, going on, the next question is, based on her condition, it didn't. I'm not saying that you could say to a certainty, right? And then there's no audible response at all, and then they go on and talk about other kidnapping calls that the officers had. As I read that testimony, it's based on the simple fact that she got out of the trunk unhurt, that you couldn't say based on her physical condition that you had a kidnapping. But, I mean, it could be a false imprisonment. It could be a lot of things.
I would suggest to the court that they had at least 15 minutes. I've been before Your Honors for 10 minutes, and I can tell you that 10 minutes is a long time.
But only if you're being beat up.
That may be the most prophetic line I've heard in years.
And Your Honors don't have guns and have not placed me in handcuffs.
Yes.
What I'm suggesting to the courts is that they had more than sufficient time, and there's no evidence in the record to support continued detention of my client, and I would ask the court to follow the precedent, Thomas. Thank you.
Okay. Thank both sides for your arguments. United States v. Chacon is now submitted for decision. At this point, we'll take a 10-minute break.